Erin Patterson, the Aussie woman who was accused of killing three people via a beef Wellington, has pleaded not guilty. We have everything you need to know from Australia. For that and everything else worth talking about, find and follow Newsable wherever you listen to podcasts.
Stuff Podcasts. Warning, this episode contains strong language and has references to sexual abuse, which some may find upsetting. Listener discretion is advised.
Knowing that you've committed yourself to go to prison, if this is part of it, okay, let's see it through. If it's apartheid, you have to front it all the way. No matter what, all the way. Tingilo Ness, former Minister of Fine Arts and Associate Minister of Culture for the Polynesian Panthers. They come to my door, handcuffed, phone in the car, down a central. I ran through our legal aid booklet, remain calm, don't be smart. You go into the interviewing room and there's screens. Unbeknownst to us at that time, police surveillance. This is you, and this is such and such. No. He's a protester against apartheid. They showed the KCs. They showed the boss. He's a protester against apartheid. He's a protester against apartheid. He's a protester against apartheid. No names. I'm on bail, but knowing that what's coming is court cases and eventually prison. Never been there before. You can't go through that and not expect consequences, eh? I mean, in my head, and a lot of times I felt I'm going against the government, I'm going against the law, all of that, you know, and the big bogey is apartheid. Well, you weigh it up. Which is worse? Apartheid. The guys I was with, they were a bit, you know, not as politicised. They weren't Polynesian Panthers. I knew my duty. I had to see this whole thing through. It's okay, brothers, we're in this together. You're not on your own. There's a huge thing that we're doing. Pleaded guilty. 12 months. Fuck. Mount Eden Prison. You're given your clothing, your bedding, and you're in line with everybody else. The inmates already, they look at me to pick out who's who, if I can squeeze him or join him in our gang prospecting, you know. When they heard protesters were in prison, everybody's got a, you know, they're coming to get us kind of thing. For a start, we're wimps, we're not gangsters, but we're protesters. You know, what? Protester? Fuck off! One morning, I saw a group of guys, five guys, go into this person's, he was a bikie, tall, Balangi fella, go into his cell, close the door, and I hear this, I just sleep with a dustpan under my bed, you know, a metal dustpan under my pillow. Every now and then, you know, you kind of get that, nobody really knows, I'm going to die in here.
Our families are part of a long line of people born and bred in the small islands of the South Pacific. But in the 1950s, our parents looked for a new life in Aotearoa, making us the first generation of New Zealand-born Pacific Islanders.
But later, in the 1970s, when the economy faced challenges, some New Zealanders started to see our presence as a problem.
Newspaper headlines claimed we were violent and dangerous.
And the government said we took Kiwis' jobs.
The government wanted us out.
Like the Black Panther movement in the United States, we decided to seize the time.
It was time to be heard. It was time to mobilize. It was time to fight back.
We formed the Polynesian Panther Party.
Our aim was to strike at the core of racism and provide a voice for our community.
But leading our people to fight for a fair and just society wasn't without sacrifice.
This is our history.
These are our words.
A lot of the soldiers who fought apartheid were picked up one by one by the police for their role in the protests, and their trials lasted for 2 years.
Whikitaito, Panther Youth. I knew that lots of the bros when we were arrested for the Springbok tour. We were in this bar, a tap on the shoulder, and there's a cop, and he goes, "Can we have a word for you outside?" I says, "About what?" "About the Springbok tour." And I knew, and I went, "Oh, right, oh, yeah." During that time we were on bail, all of us got together and we decided this. We shouldn't recognise their courts. We should all defend ourselves. We got some lawyers to help us with our defence and explain to us how we should approach it and the protocols and all that. The trial was great from our perspective because, you know, we made a mockery of it, really.
The trials were another form of protest.
We wouldn't stand up for the judge. You have to stand up or we'll hold you in contempt, and we all gave him the finger. So they adjourned. Then we had a little quick meeting outside, and they said, "How are we going to get through this, you know, blah, blah, blah." Up to you. You just get a fucking stand. We're not standing. The compromise was we would stand outside the courtroom when the registers came in and says, "Please all stand," and everybody would stand, and when they sit, we'll walk in. And then 11:30, she's fine when it walks in. She walks with all this ball up and comes into the public gallery, and one time there, puts the pots down. She says, Kai's up, whoa! And we all got up, and the judges came, "What?" They were objecting. They were, oh, we just went, "Oh, after our Kai on it, it's all good. Don't worry about it, judge." It just went downhill for the court proceedings, and it turned into a nightmare for them. I got 6 months away.
Will Ilolahia, co-founder of the Polynesian Panther Party. I knew I was going to get picked up, and yeah, sure enough, I got picked up. A lot of our troops were done straight away, you know. All the soldiers like Feke and Tang and all of them, they got arrested straight away. We got picked up later on and they were questioning us. At that time I was facing 24 charges for inciting a riot, unlawful assembly. We were told to plead not guilty. During my trial, you know, they were saying, "Is this you?" And I said, "No, it's not me. We all look the same to you." You can see in the footage of the police where, you know, I'm the guy in the red helmet, you know, because my thing fogged up. So I took my helmet off because, as I said, it was getting hot. They said, "Is this you, Mr. Ilolahia?" Well, you know. When all the facts were all the evidence that the prosecuting were coming up, I was quite surprised, actually, of how much stuff they had against me, you know. Phone taps, the whole shebang. I was looking at 10 years. My lawyers were saying, "Shit, well, you're going down." We heard that the Hart people were trying to get Bishop Desmond Tutu to come over, so our legal sort of said to him, well, let's try and get him over to be a character witness for us.
John Minto. I was part of Hart and the National Anti-Party Committee. We got hold of Tutu. He came as a guest of the Anglican Church, invited by the Anglican Bishop, Paul Reeves.
There was a bit of press about the fact he was coming to Aotearoa, But a lot of people didn't know that he was actually specifically coming in to be our star witness.
It was a tactic to bring him there, yep. I mean, people were facing very serious charges. Most of the people involved in Patu Squad, they were charged with unlawful assembly and riot, and I'd been charged with unlawful assembly in a separate trial.
Bishop Desmond Tutu came into the courthouse and he was in his full regalia. We organised amongst our supporters that they all stand up when the Archbishop came in. Public gallery all stood up, and then we, of course, stood up. And as he was walking towards the witness box, prosecution was standing up, and all the police and wardens and all that were attention. The jury stood up. The judge was just about to stand up. And then I think the judge woke up and read it, oh, I'm the judge here. And that was the mana of the God.
This was a man with enormous mana, power and charisma.
Goes up to the witness box.
He gets up there and then Honi Harawira was cross-examining him, talking to him about what's apartheid, what does it mean in South Africa, and what does the world say about this? What should people of goodwill be doing? What do you think the solution is? And talking about, you know, the boycotts and what have you.
And he said, these people are not criminals. These people are freedom fighters.
The trials were strung out over 2 years. This was a critical time in the trial.
Ralphie did that and we went down to the cells and that kind of stuff because it was timed in such a way that this was like our last pitch. Being in and out of court and, you know, doing all the legal aid schemes, we know that if you called up real quick, they're done. An hour and 10 minutes, we get called up to go back to court. So I said, oh, fuck, here it is. So I was priming myself. You know, and I was more, all the time I was worried about how I was going to tell Mum and Dad. You know, how would my mother take this? You know, because like I said, I was already ready to 10 years, man. And I knew that if I got in there, I was gone. So I get up there, you know, getting ready, you know, to be told guilty. And when the jury said, not guilty, and when I heard that, you know, not guilty, man, it was like, shit. And, because I knew technically I was guilty, man. And as I was coming out of the court case, you know, all the jurors were waving at me and all that kind of number. I just wanted to get out of that place. You know, I just wanted to get out. But as I was going past all the cops that were, you know, wagged back from the Panther days, the Big Patrol, the Task Force, the Blimmin' Dawn, you know, all those kind of things, they just looked at me and said, we'll fucking get you, where are you? And I thought, fuck. I took that serious because I could see they were pissed off. You know, they finally were able to nab me. And I was pissed off that I had to take a black man to tell the country that I'm born, that I did this for you. That was really what I was pretty pissed off about. That, you know, that I had to get a guy from South Africa to come and tell New Zealand that what I did was okay. There was a planned trip to go to Tonga. My mum and dad were quite shocked when we were about to come home, and I said, no, Dad, I'm staying. Dad couldn't believe it, you know. He just said, what, staying here? What are you going to do? Because I knew that I'll be done or killed or something.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read From Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week, we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture, and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So, for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to the Long Read from Stuff wherever you get your podcasts. Today on Newsable, we go inside the courtroom where Erin Patterson pleaded not guilty to murder charges related to that infamous Beef Wellington lunch, plus why it's a good time to be a first home buyer, and the diss battle between Kendrick Lamar and Drake. For everything that's worth talking about, find and follow Newsable wherever you get your podcasts.
We heard that Bishop Tutu had come over and stood up in court and got everybody off. There were 30 other people, and Will was included in that. We were very happy about that. My cell. You got a bed and enough room to do press-ups, and I had a window bars, and I could see the opposite wall beside me, and I saw these pigeons. You lucky bastards, you know. Oh, fuck, you know. Oh, you're cool. Oh, wow. Oh, don't go there. Oh, okay. Next morning, there they are again. Oh, cool. Hello. You know, you start going crazy in here. I mean, you're sitting in the yard up there and you see buses going by over the wall. And you think, wow, there's a life out there, you know. And this is a world within a world. Think about mom and home and freedom and all of that. Mediama, well, she used to come in and keep contact with me and let me know what's happening. My son, my sister brought him up to Mount Eden prison to visit me, and I told her, don't bring him back here again because I don't want him to see me there, you know. And that was it, and I never wanted to see him while I was in prison again. Too hard. You're always wondering, will I make it out of here alive? I'm going to die in here. Shit, you know. Vicky really looked after me. His word was law in there.
By the time I was getting on to 15, I'd fallen in love with Tegeanama, as my parents say. They definitely always there for me, and so I'd run away from home. The social workers would get me after a few days, take me back, and so it became a cycle of taking me back home, running away, until they made me a state ward, put me in foster cares around the city, and I'd just run away from there and take off to Cromer Road, end up back at Tegeanama.
I couldn't be by myself. Can't be isolated, because that's when they start picking me off. But Fekir stood up, you know, he was leave him alone. I used to wake up in the morning and he was by the foot of my bed.
I was 20, I think, and I was quite well known in that world. When we first went in there, we were all in what they called the association room. That's where all new inmates go. That night, I heard a lot of our voices, and I looked at the peephole, and there was like four inmates, and I knew them all. One of them, who I knew, I said to him, how come all of you are here tonight? We come and get those protesters. I said to him, well, I'm with them. They said, oh, just stay out of the room, bro. And I said, nah, bro, it's not happening. And what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know, bro, you just do what you have to do, and you'll find out what I'm going to do. You know, I was so happy to be there for a thing, you know, and make sure nothing happened to him. Whatever happens, Ray, you just stick with me. I wasn't going to need anything happen to him.
I've seen queues outside a person's cell, you know, and you know they've done wrong. But like Ficker says, you just mind your own business. Don't get involved. The others that went in with me, One ended up in a group that were murderous crims. And Fiki warned him, don't go with those people. Well, he ended up with those people. They probably stood over him. They forced him to get his wife to bring in money to protect them. And another one, young one, his demeanor changed. He never spoke openly again. And yet when we went in, we were all bow to the people and brothers and stuff. And then one day, and this is at Mount Eden, you know, his whole demeanor changed, and I knew something had gone wrong. You know, something had happened to him. He got sent to a different place. I reckon he got raped. I know for a fact I would have been raped by other inmates who had beef about something, and they just, it's like the guy on my right cell picks on me because he's been picked on by the fella next to him, and so it goes around. And I'm expected to do the same thing. And if it wasn't for Fiki, yeah, leave him alone. They left me alone.
I self-exiled myself in Tonga. At least I had an option. You know, I could go to another country that I'm part of. I got entrenched into my Tongan culture and got a Tongan passport. The islands are a totally different way of living. I had confrontations with the local Tongan community. It was hard, man, because, you know, people were saying, what are you doing here? All my mates up there were saying, hey, ooh, can you set us up with a contract to get some mutton flaps and da-da-da, you know, for New Zealand? I said, nah. Hey, can you, you know, talk to Nestle's Cafe, you know, Nestle's for the da-da-da? Nah. You know, I was just anti-New Zealand, man. I was just pissed off. And, you know, never flew a Air New Zealand flight again, never ate any New Zealand food, you know, just anti-New Zealand. I never, you know, I never felt like a Kiwi anymore.
Now, I did 9 months until the minute that you step out that gate, you're still in there. Will I make it till tomorrow morning? Because there's always that last minute somebody wants to get a reputation. They know that they're leaving tomorrow morning. Oh, they get the bash. They retaliate. Your sentence goes on and on and on. When I actually came out of prison, it was kind of overcast. I think I had about $24. I felt lost and disorientated. I didn't know what to do next. What I should have done really was get down on my knees and kiss the ground and hallelujah, I'm free. I allowed my wife at the time to lead me, you know, to wherever she'd planned, you know. All I knew was I was out of there and I'm free. I didn't even know about getting into a car and driving away to where. Didn't even think about finding a job. You know, that thought never crossed my mind until a couple of weeks later when, you know, then you start thinking back into some kind of normality. Even though I'd done the time and that, we were still persecuted, especially for the Panthers. You know, we went against the system and we got done. It wasn't acceptable, not even with the newer people. He got in prison for fighting the police and, you know, all of that. That black sheep stigma. Spiritually, we were all hurt. No counselling, nothing like that. So we all had to dig deep and more or less hide. Couldn't find work. What was your last job? I was in prison. Never mind. That went on for a long period of time, you know. And you have to tell the truth, you know. Some people don't and they get caught out. And it's very hard to get a job. I did this labour hire thing, which took me to Green Lane Hospital. The human resources woman, she liked what I did and she asked me if I could stay. I hid in the dungeons of Green Lane Hospital. For 11 years.
The Prime Minister's called a general election for Saturday, July the 14th, which is just 4 weeks away.
We got a date.
That doesn't give you much time to run up to an election, Prime Minister.
Doesn't give my opponents much time to run up to an election, does it?
At Parliament today, a start will be made on preparations for the formal handing over of power from Sir Robert Muldoon's National Government to the new Labour Government of David Lange.
Explosions rang out from the 40-metre ship at about midnight.
Rainbow Warrior didn't go to a warrior's death. She sank in her sleep just after midnight, tied up in an Auckland wharf.
I'm going to give it to you if you hold your breath just for a moment. I can smell the uranium on it as you lean towards it.
There has been a nuclear accident. One of the atomic reactors at the Chernobyl atomic power plant in the city of Kiev was damaged.
In the course of the U.S. effort to explore and work in space, there's never been anything like what happened today.
Less than 2 minutes after liftoff, the rocket speeding the shuttle at 2,000 miles an hour exploded.
David Cook! And that surely is the try that clinches Cup for New Zealand.
Auckland followed the other major world markets this morning. Panic selling in the wake of the Wall Street crash wiped more than $4 billion off the market value in less than an hour.
Any hopes they had of stopping the West Berliners destroying the wall were soon dashed as dozens of young men pulled on a rope and chains. The chant went up, Mauer weg, done with the wall.
And the Prime Minister has resigned. In a shock announcement only minutes ago, Mr. Lange said he'll tender his resignation to the Governor General.
They know when it hits the bottom, it'll be 1990. Goodbye to the 80s. In 3, 2, 1, Happy New Year!
For 27 years, 6 months and 6 days, he had been a prisoner. Nelson Mandela, the leader of the African National Congress, he is a free man.
I accordingly declare Mr. Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela duly elected President of the Republic of South Africa. On behalf.
At Green Lane Hospital, I digitized millions of x-rays. I was there for 11 years. Nelson Mandela, he came here in 1995. I went along to that. Will was there.
I was born in the city. I was raised in the street.
I built up a bit of confidence to come back, but I came through on my Tongan passport. So I came in, you know, snuck in, and I thought, oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, so I came in like that.
Dear friends and comrades, you chose to speak out and to act when it was less fashionable to do so. You put the well-being of South Africans before your own. You elected to brave the Beatles and pronounce that New Zealand could not be free when other human beings were being subjected to a legalized and cruel system of racial oppression.
Thanked all of us that were locked up for the protests and for everybody that was involved in the protests. Hongied with Nelson Mandela. This is new.
Look at me now.
I'll never forget it. I mean, that's one of the highlights, you know.
Together, we have the power to move mountains. I thank you.
While the factory was my future and the ghetto was my grave.
I was just happy to see the man and meet him and know that he lived, you know, because there's always that he could have been like Steve Biko. It vindicated my being locked up.
Did you ever see a higher step, a cooler looking man to equal mine?
1981. Nelson Mandela was in prison, and when he heard that this tiny country in the South Pacific were fighting in the streets over the apartheid South Africa, he said it was like a ray of sunshine shone into their cells.
it took me that long before I'd be, you know, felt I was a Kiwi again.
Look at me
now. I'm proud to be Kiwi, mate. Our country here, we're a country of revolutionaries. What we did in the Panthers is nothing new for Kiwis. I mean, you know, look at the suffrage, well, the women suffragettes when they stood up for women's right to vote. If there's anything I would like people to know, that what we did in the Panthers and that kind of stuff, Kiwis, if they were on the same wavelength, they would have done the same thing.
Like the ray of sunshine that entered Mandela's cell on Robben Island, my light at the end of the tunnel, or my hope, came to me through music. I hid for 11 years before I could come out and face reality and start up my band again, which had got broken up when I got locked up. I'd formed a band about 1975, and my band was Unity. Found that in prison, music helped me focus and stay sane. I had to let out all that anger and frustration against the injustices somehow, besides laying my life on the line. Now I'd do it through music.
In the next episode of Once a Panther.
Joining the Panthers saved my life. A lot of our young people are struggling with identity. The strongest form of protest was to be successful.
I still keep active. 50 years later, we're protesting at the same church, but over a different immigration matter.
My experience as the Panthers, I felt like I could take on the world. I thought I was, when I was doing all this action for our communities, I was doing it for my kids. But in hindsight, I sacrificed my quality time with them for the revolution. Cost me a lot.
This episode is dedicated to the memory of Wahine Toa Miriama Rohihi Ness. Once a Panther is a Stuff podcast written, produced, mixed and edited by Brad Flayhive and Alex Liu. Original music by Andrew Faliatua. Songs Thou We Are and From Street to Sky are written and performed by Tingi Lau Ness and Unity Pacific and are available on all major streaming platforms. Additional creative input by Stuff's podcast director, Adam Dudding. Executive produced by Carol Hirschfeld. If you want to know more, head to stuff.co.nz/Once a Panther, where you'll find links to every episode, as well as photos, artwork, and feature articles. You'll also find links for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and so on. If you're listening on Apple, don't forget to give Once a Panther a 5-star rating and review. It helps other listeners find us. This episode included audio from Getty. This podcast was made possible with help from New Zealand On Air.
Hi, Adam Dudding here, Stuff's podcast director. If you're enjoying this podcast, how about contributing to the Stuff Supporter Program? You can contribute any amount you choose, and you can do it just once, or monthly, or annually. Direct support from people like you helps us produce the kind of journalism you're listening to right now. Go to stuff.co.nz /support.